The Oregon Shakespeare Festival runs a long season from roughly Valentine's Day to Halloween, and new plays come into the rotation, the repertory, at different times in the season. The final two plays to join the list for this year open this month. They include The Happiest Song Plays Last, a recent work by the playwright Chiara Alegria Hudes. She has won awards for some of her plays, including a Pulitzer Prize for Water by the Spoonful, which is the predecessor to Happiest Song. Chiara joins us in the studio. Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you very much.
You have multiple talents, apparently. You're a musician and a composer, and in addition to being a playwright, I imagine there are a few other hidden talents we haven't heard about. Hot dog eating or something, I don't know. What appeals to you in writing plays?
Well, I think the bug was planted early on in some mysterious ways. I'll give two examples. One was at my home growing up. My mother is a practitioner of Santeria, which is a living room practice that it originated in Yoruba land and was brought to the New World through slavery and became a syncretized religion in the Caribbean with Catholicism, with the colonial religion. And so I grew up... Fast forward to my youth, and I grew up in a household where there would often be religious ceremonies happening, drumming, chanting, and so it had a theatrical sort of element to it. And my earliest plays, I was very interested in exploring rituals. And the flip side to that of my youth growing up is that my aunt was a composer for the Big Apple Circus for 20 years, and she taught me how to read music. And I would go to the bandstand with her every year when she was working on her new score, and I would turn pages on her piano while she played during the live circus, and clowns would be tumbling by. And so I just, you know, I had a theatrical youth, not of my own doing, but certainly absorbed the theatrical lives of others.
I can almost sense the anticipation, though. Like, someday I want to not be the person who turns the pages. I want to be the person who's playing the music.
Well, I don't know. I think that page turning is... I don't have a performer instinct in me. I think I did stay a page turner a little bit as a playwright, though I actually type what's on the pages that are being turned to.
So let's talk about The Happiest Song Plays Last, and it's actually one of three plays. It's a trilogy. Was it intended to be a trilogy from the beginning?
No, they're all standalone plays, but seen together, the cumulative force of them is the coming of age of a young man who becomes a Marine and then returns to civilian life.
And that's Elliot. Elliot, A Soldier's Fugue was the first of the three?
Yes. In that play, he enlists.
And is Elliot based on your husband? Is that what I hear?
He's based on my first cousin growing up in North Philadelphia. And we do have a military legacy in our family. My uncle, who I never met, was a Borincanir, which means he was one of the kind of segregated Puerto Rican regiments to serve. And then my uncle was a Marine in Vietnam. And then there was, around the time that we were all coming of age, the war in Iraq was happening. And so this became a real way that some young men and women were finding their way out of, you know, a poor educational system with a promise of betterment and of, you know, stability in their lives.
So is it based loosely on your cousin? I mean, to the point where your cousin didn't come back to you and say, hey, don't write about me?
When I had my cousin was injured while he was in Iraq, and he is a young charmer. I often think of him as the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air because he has this big cheeseburger smile, just like Will Smith, and he lights up any room. And yet he was actually 17 when he enlisted. He was underage and had to get his parents' permission. Within 6 months of being in Iraq, he was there. He was the first Marine regiment to be in Iraq. He was injured. And so when I saw him after his injury, I saw that he still had that boyish sparkle, but something was different. And it was my deep love for my cousin, my deep protectiveness of my cousin that wanted to explore, well, what is that? What changed and what happened? And how is that going to happen to an entire generation of young people?
And the relationship between onstage cousins is central to the story of all three plays, Elliot, A Soldier's Fugue, and Water by the Spoonful on The Happiest Song Plays Last. Can we assume then that Yasmin is based at least partly on you?
Partly, yeah. Yasmin is a conglomerate. You know, all characters are related to me. Yasmin is a conglomerate of myself and really a different cousin, Liz, whom I adore, and also a work of fiction. You know, I really enjoyed examining the cousin relationship in this series of plays. I had this notion that the American family in and of itself is just a wildly diverse entity. And I think cousin relationships kind of bring that home, where I know in my family, sitting around the Thanksgiving table, we have anyone from, you know, adults who are illiterate to city council women, all breaking bread together. And this is the American family as I experienced it growing up, this deep diversity educationally, class-wise, even race and ethnicity. In my family, there's many skin colors. You know, we have this Afro-Caribbean diaspora. And as I've delved into that topic more, I find that that strikes a chord with many people.
So the Thanksgiving table sounds like the United Nations.
It is. And, you know, especially I think as the income gap becomes wider and wider, you know, that families are experiencing great divides of income and of life experience. And I think the cousin relationship is a really fun one to explore in that, because, again, there's a blood relationship, there's a culture and a history in common, but different households. So how do different households and the histories of those households kind of lead to different pathways is one of the things I like to play around with. And I also think cousins get to just be candid with each other and party and tease each other. And so I think it's a relationship that leads to a lot of comedy also.
Almost like brothers and sisters growing up, but then you realize as you get older, there are some differences that become a little less subtle over time.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Chiara Alegria Hudes is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is the playwright for The Happiest Song Plays Last, opening this week at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. She won the Pulitzer for its predecessor, Water by the Spoonful, Tony Award for In the Heights. All kinds of other awards to her name. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments at 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There's a mention in the plays about the crumbling high school in Philadelphia that Elliot attends. Was that anything like your high school?
No. Here we go with the cousins divide. So I had the great fortune of attending Central High School, which is one of the oldest public high schools in this nation. Whereas my cousin Elliot went to that was a magnet school. And so my cousin Elliot went to his local school, which was Edison. And in fact, the situation in the Philadelphia public school system has gotten quite dire. And so again, even just looking at which public school two cousins go to as a way to explore what happens in American society and what happens with that American dream that might or might not exist. So, yeah, I mean, libraries have shuttered in the public school system. There was a really terrible time when even custodial staff was not in attendance at the public school system. So it is in an emergency state, unfortunately.
When you're trying to address the issues of society, is there a sense of doing it in a once removed thing? I mean, you're not out there making speeches or taking to the streets, but you're making plays which take longer to craft than speeches, especially some of the political speeches of today's world. Is there a sense sometimes like you really do want to get out to the streets, or is this the best avenue for you, you think?
I think getting out to the streets is extremely important, and I do, you know, I'm not speaking on the Washington Mall necessarily, but I do have the great fortune of going and speaking, especially for me personally. I really connect with young people, and so, for instance, I was just in New York with an organization called Girls Right Now that's just teaching girls in New York City to write and to then stand on a stage and speak their words aloud, and it's a very simple thing, but it's actually quite moving to see these young women just have to read their words out loud in public. I was quite moved, and I got to speak to them about the issues of the day, and this was the day after the Charleston shootings, and so everyone was in an emotional place. It was before there was a groundswell of action towards the Confederate flag, so it was a sorrowful day, and to speak to these girls at that moment. You know, and that week was such a compelling week with the Supreme Court decisions that were being made about marriage. It's such a robust time. I mean, really, when I say that, I'm talking about these few weeks even feels like a robust time to be writing and also to be out there speaking and doing activist work.
And how old were the girls that you were working with at Girls Right Now?
High school age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So definitely aware of what's going on in the world
and
capable of pulling it in and processing it.
Absolutely. And also capable of taking an easier path too. So I was there saying, you know, take that more challenging path, wake up and decide to really engage the world and to go out there and grapple with what's happening.
Have you kept in touch with any of the girls from that session? I wonder about what their impressions would be like now, 7 to 10 days later, to see how things have been going.
You know, I haven't spoken to them since I gave that speech, but I am curious to know, you know, what they would think about now the Confederate flag, and it, from 10 days ago when it felt like utter despair and a real nadir in this country. Do they feel a moment of hope? Do they feel that the flag is a step in the right direction? You know, as New Yorkers, is that even something that they relate to in Clock? Is that more of a Southern issue?
True. Kiara Alegria Hudes, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the playwright of The Happiest Song Plays Last, opening at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival this week. The awards you've got, I mean, it's quite a list here already. A nomination for the Pulitzer for Eliot, A Soldier's Fugue. You got the Pulitzer, for Water by the Spoonful. I mean, so was it sort of anticlimax by the time you've been a finalist for Eliot, and then by the time you got it, was it like, okay, finally, here we go?
Well, my daughter, who's 8 years old, she was extremely proud, and I had a neighbor in our building say to me, "I heard you got a Pulitzer Prize." So there's nothing anticlimactic about getting a Pulitzer Prize, that's for sure.
No doubt. Now, you had also won the Tony, I guess, with In the Heights?
Yes.
For the book for In the Heights. So Lin-Manuel Miranda was the major operator in the Heights, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to think about, because I've been reading about his work with Hamilton, mm-hmm. which I guess is about to go to Broadway right
yes,
about the same
they
time.
They start previews on Monday.
Uh-huh. All right. So are you keeping in touch with him about the progress of his show while you're working on yours?
Absolutely. Well, he also is my downstairs neighbor, so and he has a newborn baby, so we see each other, and we drop our babies off when we need to run to the store, and then he tells me about his new lyric fix for Hamilton, and I tell him about what I'm working on with my play, and we keep abreast of each other's work. It's when you collaborate with someone, when you share this sacred contract of copyright with someone, it is kind of akin to a marriage or a family relationship. It just doesn't end. It just lasts forever, so we have that ongoing kind of collaborative and friendship relationship.
That's a great phrase, the sacred contract of copyright.
Oh, yes. To us playwrights, it's everything.
it is a covenant. I was reading the Oregon Shakespeare Festival study guide. There are study guides for, is it all plays? Yeah, all plays. The one for last year for Water for the Spoonful is just fun to read through in itself because it references all kinds of items and issues from PTSD to chutes and ladders. Now, you know, some of this comes from living on Earth, but beyond that, how much research do you do as you prepare a play, as you turn it into a work of art?
I do a great deal of research. It's one of the fun things about my life as a writer. I basically try to choose material that I don't know about and that requires me to do research, but that at the same time I relate to deeply as a person so that there is a base connection that has meaning and depth. So, for instance, in the military, I was raised in a Quaker household. In addition to my mom being a practitioner of Santeria, she also did activist work with the American Friends Service Community for 20 years. I knew nothing about war. And obviously, if I was going to write about it, I had to take responsibility for doing some research. I spoke to a lot of veterans, did all sorts of work. So, you know, it made me think you were talking about the disparate elements in my plays. And I do, you know, I come from a family of cooks. And, you know, we throw ingredients into the pot. We don't use measuring cups. We use the palm of our hand. And what you have on hand is what you cook with. And it reminds me of the classic Tim O'Brien story, The Things They Carry, just the ingredients at hand. And I think that those ingredients at hand are what I put into my plays through a very careful research process, but also just through the organic process of life and what is on my shelf, what is on my desk, what's in my kitchen cabinet.
You have a few more shelves, I would think, than some people, though, growing up of a Jewish father, Puerto Rican mother. You mentioned Quaker and Santeria, so all kinds of different influences around you. And it sounds like a fairly multi-ethnic surrounding neighborhood as well.
A lot of disparate influences. You know, I think it was in the 90s that the U.S. Census allowed people to check more than one box for race and ethnicity. And now I think the delightful thing is that it's becoming kind of clear that the box itself is a limited shape, no matter how many one can click, that there is a lot of space between those boxes too. And I've known that from the time I had any social awareness whatsoever. You know, I am a Latina. From my physical appearance, I look Jewish. I'm a woman. I have a very diverse religious background. I come from a neighborhood that was a starter a lot of starter homes for immigrant families from around the world. So my best friends growing up were, you know, truly fresh off the boat, Vietnamese, Ethiopian. We were the only Latinos on the block. So that's all there. That's me. That's my life. And that's this country as far as I'm concerned.
Maybe instead of checking boxes on the census, we could just sort of link them. You know, you circle the two that you're most like and say somewhere in here.
Exactly.
I always ask this of playwrights, what it's like to see the words that you crafted coming out of other people, because there's obviously one place where it sits in your head. You've been through probably several table readings and stage readings by the time you get to actually putting a play on stage. So, but what's it like when you get to see a final staged version of it? And, you know, this version could be very different from one in Chicago or New York or Hartford.
Absolutely. You know, there's an extraordinary beauty and music to the way people talk. It's just one of the things that I'm enamored with, and therefore I write plays. And so to hear my words, for instance, I got a chance to see an actor named Daniel is playing the role of Elliot here. And he's very different from the actor who originated the role in New York. Both outstanding performances. And just to hear his music brought to my words, it really was an honor. He has a different kind of voice. He supports his voice differently. He has a different sort of accent. My training originally was as a composer, and there's that moment when you hand your sheet music to a string quartet, to a bass clarinetist, and you hear those notes out loud for the first time, and it's the moment that it's born, you know, and so there is that birth moment every time in a new actor's voice when I hear those words.
The Happiest Song Plays Last is the latest work on stage at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, of Chiara Alegría Hudes. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Pleasure to meet you.
It was fun to talk.